Good evening, Paisano. It's great to see you here. Some of you have been coming here for years. Some of us, like myself, we got here as quickly as we could. And I appreciate the invitation. I've so looked forward to this. I live in the state of North Carolina now. I'm the president of Campbell University, one of our Baptist schools. People ask me wherever I go, where are you from? I tell them I'm from Texas, and then they hear me talking about North Carolina this and my school in North Carolina, and they said, I thought you said you were from Texas. I said, I am from Texas. I just live in North Carolina right now. And I have found that being a native Texan is an identity best enjoyed when you don't live in Texas. We can kind of swagger a little bit. But it's wonderful to be here this week. I've heard about Paisano for years, and hopefully, as I get closer to the Lord this week, I'm also going to get in touch with my inner Texan again. So thank you for being here tonight. Todd Steele, it's so wonderful to give birth to something as I was involved in the starting of Truett Seminary and to see that it has a good parent now. It's thriving under his leadership. And if you didn't come to the Bible study this morning, you missed something, we'll let you come tomorrow. I was like a hungry man at a wonderful feast today. So, Todd, thank you so much. I don't know if Steve's made it back from children's sermon yet. I'll save my remarks about him when he gets here. So, tonight, I want you to turn to a book in the Old Testament. Do we have any math teachers here? Any math teachers here tonight? How about any accountants? Okay, there's a book in the Bible for you. It's called Numbers. Turn there. Chapter 13. Verse 26, a familiar story. I'm going to read excerpts from it. The account of Moses sending the spies into the promised land, and they came back with not one report, but two. And they came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. And Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, He will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." And may the Lord add to the reading of His word. Three ideas I want you to hold together. The first one is change. Change means to cause to be different or to transform. Most of us say, well, you know, change is good for you every once in a while. Everybody needs a little change. But be honest, the only person that really likes change is a baby with a wet diaper. The second idea is transition. That means a passage from one state of being to another. And in this case, think of it as the process of living out or working out change. Change, transition, and turning points. A turning point is a decisive moment, a significant event in time and place. Now, for the children of Israel, their most important turning point came, as we read about tonight. But their dramatic change in their history and their identity was the Exodus. For in the Exodus, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob heard their cries of agony. He saw their suffering, reached down into time, set events into motion, whereby they were led out of Egyptian bondage through the parted waters of the Red Sea towards the place that he had promised and prepared for them. That was their significant change. It was something that God accomplished. True and lasting change is done through the power and the grace of God. For it is by grace that we are saved through faith and not of ourselves. It is the gift of God. God is the one that brought the change in their standing, in their identity, and in their history. Their transition, remember that word, was the wilderness. To turn a noun into a verb, they transitioned for 40 years into the wilderness. Now, I could put a pack on my back and get my hiking shoes on, and at a leisurely place, allowing time to camp out at night, could walk from Egypt to the land of Canaan in 11 days. But it took them 40 years. 40 years to learn what God wanted to teach them. One of my former colleagues, a woman, said that the reason it took the children of Israel 40 years to go from Egypt to Canaan is because they were led by Moses, and Moses, being a man, didn't want to pull over and stop and ask for directions. Well, it took them that long to learn what God wanted to teach them and to prepare them to enter the place that he had prepared and promised for them. When we pick up the story, a portion of which you heard this evening, they are on the cusp of Canaan, standing at the threshold of tomorrow. They can literally see with their naked eyes the land that God has prepared for them. This is the most crucial turning point yet in their transitioning to the promise to work out the change that God through his power has wrought in their lives. In preparation for that, Moses, their leader, sent spies into the land on a reconnaissance mission. And they came back not with one report, but two reports. The good report said, "This is a great place. It is a fertile land. It is promising. We can settle down there and thrive." They described it as a land flowing with milk and honey. But there was another report called the bad report. And it said that this is a foreboding land. It's menacing and threatening. There are giant people there who live in walled cities that are heavily fortified. And at this turning point, which report would the children of Israel act upon? Which report would they hear by faith? The good report or the bad report? The most significant turning point yet in their experience of being the liberated people of God. Every one of you understands this because you have been at a turning point, and without even knowing you personally, I know that some of you tonight are at a major turning point in your life. You believe that God is up to something and is in the process of setting things into motion to transition you into something else that he has planned and is preparing for you. But a turning point is a challenging experience. And there you stand, wanting more evidence, demanding more assurance. If you're a data-driven person, you'd like a few more facts to place in your file before you make your final decision. You're at a turning point. What keeps people from pushing through their turning points into the new reality that God has created for them? Well, if you think about a turning point, by its very nature, it is a challenging experience, somewhat awkward. You've heard of the phrase déjà vu. It's that strange sensation that maybe you have been in a place before that you can't quite remember. At a turning point, we are tempted to coin a very new word to make it up. I'll call it déjà vu, and that's a feeling that you have never been here before. Even though you've been through other turning points, the nature of the turning point where you are at that moment is unique. It's challenging. It seems to be more than you have within yourself to handle. I might add that if you don't feel some anxiety or uneasiness, even in your spiritual life, you might not be doing anything new or living on faith. So a turning point is an awkward, challenging experience. And some people don't push through them. And in fact, the children of Israel on this occasion did not push through to move into the reality God had prepared for them. Another reason people don't go through turning points is because they are overcome by the pace of life. And I don't care if you live in Marfa or Minneapolis, Alpine or Los Angeles, Rotan or Raleigh, North Carolina, life is only increasing in its pace, and it seems to overwhelm us at times, and we can only handle, humanly speaking, so many changes at once. I heard about the man who was an accountant, and it was tax season. His wife understood that he had to stay late, work on tax returns. His six-year-old daughter in first grade didn't quite understand. All she knew was that daddy wasn't home for supper some nights. He wasn't there to tuck her in, read her a bedtime story, and to say evening prayers. And one night his mom was tucking her in and dad was at the office preparing tax returns. The little girl said, "I miss daddy, mom." She started crying. She said, "Well, honey, you have to understand. Dad can't get all of his work done. That's why he's staying late." And the little girl, having been to school, smiled and said, "Well, why don't they put Daddy in another group?" How many of you would like to be put in a slower group sometimes? That's what happens at a turning point. We're sometimes overwhelmed with the pace of change, and we don't push through. Also, at a turning point, we come to the limit of our own resources. In the ministry of the church, it seems that we have more to do with less resources. Humanly speaking, though, God's people at their strongest and most challenging turning points will always be under-resourced. Joshua, who succeeded Moses as the leader of the people, brought down the walls of Jericho with nothing more than a great trumpet section. He didn't have much, but it was enough to do what God had asked him to do. And David, as the shepherd boy, the future king of Israel, he brought down and felled the pride of the Philistine army, that giant of a man named Goliath from the city of Gath, with one stone. Peter and John, the apostles, as recorded in the book of Acts, were near the temple, and a crippled beggar came up to them asking for money, for resources. And Peter said, "I don't have any silver and gold, but what I have, I give you. Now, in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, get up and walk." And people at their turning points are painfully aware of their lack of resources and fail to see the bounty of God's good resources that are available through faith. But feeling overwhelmed, they don't push through. And then there is that all too human tendency to relapse, to revert, to go backwards. The people of Israel were ready to go back to Egypt. It's kind of like the third day of the diet that you started. It doesn't matter if it's the South Beach diet or the Atkins diet or the Paleo diet or the Metafast diet or the Weight Watchers diet. The first day, it's okay. The second day, the resolve is still there. And the third day, it's back to business as usual. The rubber band snaps back. These are some reasons why people do not push through the turning points of life. I could take a microphone and go down these aisles, and if in a moment of transparency and vulnerability, you were to talk about your past turning points and why you did not pass through them, you could share some things that would help us to understand why people do not push through. But we're not trying to come up with a diagnostic manual. We want to understand what it takes to move through the turning points, to transition into the change that God has prepared for us. And we learn that from the story of our ancestors, the people of Israel. So if tonight you're at a turning point, or when you realize that you soon will be at some future point in your life, first of all, at that turning point, affirm who God is and what God is doing in your midst. That is an act of faith. We as Christians are confessional people. We live by the faith that we confess in Christ. And you do realize, don't you, that at every turning point, there will always be a good report and a bad report. There's something positive to hang your hat on and something negative to fill you full of fear and trepidation. So it was for Israel. It was true. There were fortified cities in the land where they were going. The people were large and powerful, but it was also true that it was a promising land where they could practice agriculture and build a civilization, a land flowing with milk and honey. But on this occasion, instead of seeing God's ability, they were swamped and overcome with their sense of inability. And that bad report spread like wildfire and burned out their faith, and they did not cross over. Critical mass is a concept of physics, but it's also a spiritual principle. That means that the energy and vision and commitment of a few can be stronger than the apathy and inertia of many. And when you come to a turning point, remember who God is and that He is in your midst, bringing forth the kingdom that has begun in Jesus Christ and that He wants to flourish in your life and to break out in the world around you. You might have to go back and retrace some of your steps and see how God was with you every step of the way as you walked through the valley, as you climbed to the top of the hill, as you went through a difficulty, as you soared to victory. God was there. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, there is no place where God is not, and He waits for you. He has prepared the place for you to enter. Transition discipleship is not a matter of jump-starting God, begging and cajoling and pleading and importuning with God to do things that God has never thought about before. It's to pray that we would have the eyes to see what God is already doing in our midst and who God is. And that God would dig out our ears so we could hear His voice as He calls us to faithfulness and to blessing. If you're at a turning point, remember who God is and that God is with you. And then let your faith get the best of you. I didn't say fear. Sometimes when somebody doesn't do well, we say, what happened? And the answer is, well, fear got the best of them. When somebody does really well, do we ever say faith got the best of them? Let faith, not fear, get the best of you at a turning point. At any turning point, the temptation is to fixate upon your fears. Faith calls you outward into the grace and the resources of God. Faith calls you beyond yourself. Fear turns you into yourself so that yourself becomes more of a problem. You are stuck to yourself. And that fear enlarges the obstacles and the barriers that are out there and makes you seem smaller to yourself. And when you start acting like a grasshopper, other people are going to treat you like a grasshopper. Faith takes you into the largeness of God. Now think about some of your fears and how ridiculous they have been in the past. Looking back on them, doesn't it seem kind of silly? I heard about the woman who was afraid of flying. Not because she was afraid of being 30,000 feet off the ground and what might happen when the plane landed or took off. She was afraid of flying because she was scared to death of going through the metal detector at the airport. And if you've had an experience with TSA lately, you can identify with this woman, right? Why was she afraid of going through the metal detector? Well, she was a worrisome sort, and she let fear get the best of her. She was a really good cook. She remembered all the meals that she had prepared for her family and church friends through the years, and she thought about all those cans of green beans and pinto beans and cream corn and candied yams and stewed tomatoes that she had opened up and poured into a pan to prepare. And in her fearful mind, she imagined, as she opened those cans, of thousands, maybe millions of tiny microscopic metallic slivers that she couldn't see that had been cooked into her food. And now over a period of years after all of those meals were now ingested in her stomach. And so then in her fear, she imagined something that looked like a metallic fur ball lodged in her stomach. And she knew that when she went through the metal detector, it would be set off, she would be arrested and never see her family again. That didn't really happen, but we chuckle because it sounds ridiculous. But haven't some of your fears that have held you back been just as insipid and ridiculous in the past? If you're at a turning point, don't let fear get the best of you. Let faith. The writer to the Hebrews says, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we don't see. Faith moves you through the turning point. There's so many other things that we could learn from this passage, but in the very end, when we come down to it, there's only one last thing to say about God's people at a turning point, and that is, you got to move forward. You can't go backwards. You have to move forward. Now, I fully understand that sometimes we are weary and wounded and broken, and we have to take a time out to heal, to be ministered to. Before you can run and not be weary, you have to walk and not faint. But in terms of the direction and purpose of your life, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, the Alpha and the Omega, there's only one direction for you to go, and that is forward. What in the world were these children of Israel thinking as they stood on the threshold of tomorrow? We learn that the mind is not very clear when the heart is in reverse. They wanted to go back to Egypt. Were they thinking about the meal plan that the Pharaoh had for them? They didn't have to worry about manna, but there were regular meals. There were no giants back there in Egypt. They preferred the security of slavery instead of the possibility of freedom. How receptive did they think the Pharaoh would be after their God had destroyed his army in the waters of the Red Sea? And did they really think that their God was going to allow them to back into Egypt while he parted again the waters of the Red Sea so that they could go back into slavery and bondage? No, there's only one way to go forward when God has a place prepared for you and you're at a turning point. Move on. Stuart Babbage was a wonderful leader of the church in Australia. God used him in a mighty way over his long life. If you went into Stuart Babbage's office, you would see on the four walls four framed photographs, all looking remarkably similar. They were each a scene of the desert. Sand, a bleached out sky, difficult to tell the dividing line between the earth and the horizon. But on each of the four walls, there were these ugly pictures of a desert scene. And whenever people asked him, "What are these pictures about?" he would tell them this story. Years before, Stuart Babbage had traveled to the nation of Iraq, and he had gone to the ancestral homeland of the biblical patriarch Abraham, Ur of the Chaldees. And there, when he climbed atop the ruins of an old ziggurat, Stuart Babbage took out his camera and aimed in the cardinal directions, north, south, east, and west, took pictures, had them developed, enlarged, and framed and placed on the four walls of his office as a reminder to him and to anyone else who would ask that centuries before, when God called Abraham to faithfulness and asked him to leave his fatherland and everything he knew to go to a place that he knew not with only a promise that he would have a great name and be a blessing to many. When God called Abraham and he looked out in front of him and all around him, this is exactly what he saw, which is to say, humanly speaking, nothing. And sometimes, like Stuart Babbage or Abraham, at that turning point, you see nothing familiar, safe, secure around you. But God says, move forward into the place that I'm preparing and that I promised for you. Is that where you are tonight? It would be so tragic if while you're at the threshold of a new day, leaning over into the promise, smelling the promised land as the breeze from that side wafts across your face, it would be tragic if you didn't take that step of faith and cross over. I don't know about any of you, but I'd sure hate to be standing in front of a door that God has opened and not walk through it. Shall we pray together? Lord, tonight, open our eyes, dig out our ears so that we can see and hear again afresh your word, to know that you are the God who delivers us and loves us and seeks to bless us. And tonight I pray for those in this room, you know them and they know who they are, who are at a particularly crucial juncture of their lives, where it's a decision, a crisis, an opportunity, a temptation. Lord, open that door, and through faith, move them to the other side. We take great comfort tonight, and we find courage in knowing that Jesus opens the door, and he is the way. Through faith in him, we move into those places that you have promised and prepared for us. May it so be in our experience as your followers. We ask this in Jesus' strong name and for his sake. Amen.